fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Have an opinion and stick to it. Unless you're wrong, then just listen to what these guys have to say. This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning, 5:31. Hey, it's Friday. We made it through.
Hey,
We made it through. It's all good. And Greg Brady
here. We haven't made it through.
Greg Brady is back on vacation next week.
Hey,
if you get a lot of vacation, you take a lot of vacation.
Sorry about that. To some of you, you're welcome. To others of you, you're welcome that I'm going away again.
I'm Andrew Walker. He is Greg Brady. This Friday, July the 18th.
You're always here. You're like Bob. And what about Bob? Always here.
I'm taking a couple weeks in August. So in about a month from now. I like working. I like you guys. I like coming in. I like hanging out.
Yes.
To talk about what's going on. British Open. Round two is underway. So more early golf. And I regret to inform you all that my boy, Graham Dillette, has just blown up. He was 1-under yesterday, along with fellow Canadian David Hearn. He was 2-under. And Dillette was, he was 2-over on the day today, so not quite as good, but he just tripled 8 and doubled 9. So just like that, you're 6-over for the championship. And when you think of the cut line, probably going to be at, right now it's projected at 1-over, but you'd think scores would be a little tougher today, so maybe 2-over. And Graham Dillette, now in tough, needs a huge back nine.
How bad has this morning gone for him? He's actually asked Henrik Stenson to break some of his clubs.
Yes.
Some of Graham Dillette's clubs. He's asked if Henrik Stenson would do that.
So that's that. Phil Mickelson is on the course right now, and he's red hot. He's 2-under through 5, so he's back to even. Tiger Woods was a big story yesterday, 3-under. Rory is right there at 6-under, leading the way. What a great first round of 66. So we'll watch all those guys as they tee off later on. What caught your interest yesterday? I know you got the Jays and the Rangers and the Aaron Seabee stuff tonight. Huh. That's really fun. I don't know what Texas is
doing. The new Rangers first baseman?
Yes, the new Rangers first baseman.
Yeah. They've had Mark Teixeira, Rafael Palmeiro, JP, Aaron Seabee. You know, a lot of the great power hitters of our era.
So they call him up from Round Rock, Texas, where he wasn't walking and he was striking out a ton. Big surprise, but he was hitting .271 with an on-base of .320. So, it was not the equivalent of what we saw from Aaron Seabee last year.
No, but Triple A pitching, right?
I mean, of course. I'm not saying he's figuring it out.
No. He's able to get in on a few more things. Just really surprised that it's for this series. But they decided to DFA Carlos Pena, who's hopped around and just hasn't been able. I mean, that might be it. But that guy's had more lives than crickets. Honestly, he's been able to.
Yeah, he squeezed out some good seasons.
Pull up career after career. Yeah, like 3 or 4 go rounds with the Tampa Bay Rays. So I don't know if you are. And I'm not looking down on it. I'm just not the hey, you should boo. Don't boo. Did you boo? Would you like to boo?
No, it's fact.
I know he's going to get it. He's going to get it.
He will get ripped.
Going to get it big tonight from the collected masses at the Rogers Center. And he may not quite understand why it's happening. And that's the best part of it. It's a vicious circle. It's like, I don't get why they're so upset at me. That's why we're upset at you, because you are so naive about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, he would. What did you write last night to me? People, he's going to think that we're all jealous of him. And maybe we are jealous of his wife.
You can feel sorry for his naivety to some extent.
So, but here's the quandary if you're the Blue Jays. On one hand, you just had a road trip from hell, but you were facing very good pitchers in very tough parks with very tough matchups. And you went 2-8, and you deserve to go 2-8. On the one hand, you should love that the Texas Rangers are coming in here tonight. They've lost 22 of their last 25. They're going to be shelling at the deadline with certain guys. And they just called up J.P. Aaron Seabee to play first. Yeah. How bad can it get? On the other hand, there's an element of fears. There always is that it's going to reach, right, this could be the low point. If you continue to play bad baseball and you lose to this sad sack of a team, even though you have Yu Darvish on the hill tonight, that could be your quote-unquote low point.
Do you think they've made an interesting call? Because I do, and I don't agree with the call to start Mark Burley on Sunday and not use Burley in the Red Sox series. They're going to go Dickey Darvish tonight. That's fine. You know, it'd be strange for people to realize the Blue Jays have actually won more games against you, Darvish, than they've lost. You haven't always had to out-duel him like Drew Hutchinson did in Arlington earlier this year. It's Marcus Stroman and a very bad Colby Lewis tomorrow. He's got a 7.99 ERA in his last 8 starts. But then it's Burley against Nick Tepish, who's a 4.97 ERA in his last 5 starts. And I'm thinking to myself, you're going to go John Lackey, Jake Peavy, John Lester during the Red Sox series. And you're not using Mark Burley, who's gotten your best results in those 3 games. And I just wish that they were, because I think you can beat Texas without using your best pitcher.
I suppose.
It's conundrum one way or the other.
I mean, you win the game you're in. I would think Mark Burley would be going tonight or tomorrow, except that he was the guy that was flying down to Minnesota for the All-Star game and had all the stuff. He wasn't, you know, sitting on the beach, right? So, yeah, I mean, I think you win the game you're in.
Don't
forget, Mark Burley, he's had one bad start this year. It came against the Red Sox.
It did come against the Red Sox at home. Yeah. Once the Red Sox series starts, it's Lackey and Hutchinson, Peavy and Happ. But you mentioned the Jays and their importance of playing Texas, and this is the night when Baltimore's tough ride supposedly starts. Baltimore's in Oakland.
They're in Oakland.
Seattle and the Angels play each other. That's good and bad, because your wild card participants will win or lose. The Angels right now are 6.5 games up on the first wild card, and Seattle sits snugly in the second. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, long way to go, and it's tough to call it the stretch run right now, but the Blue Jays can't afford to continue to struggle, and they will get healthier in a few weeks, and tonight is kind of night one. Here we go, 5:37. Brady and Walker, lots more still to come. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good morning, happy Friday. It's Brady and Walker, 5:44, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now and Then coming up in about 6 minutes from now. Today's look at history for July the 18th. Poor Graham DeLay. Just explodes. We get into like what drives your sports passion, I guess. I think every broadcaster still has, and some of it is secret, right? There's some guys out there that have huge bias and can barely report because they have pom-poms sometimes. But I think we all have an element of fandom for some teams. Nothing like when we were a kid. Do you cheer for anybody today like you did when you were a kid?
No, I can't think of anything that's like that. I always want England to do well at the World Cup because it feels far away. But yeah, people don't understand. You end up covering a team that you might have enjoyed growing up, and then they get knocked out in the first round, and you're like, well, good. There's 6 weeks. I don't have to go down to the rink. It's easier on my workload when that happens. And yet,
there's an element of that.
I don't feel for a second that the broadcasters, people who work, say, for the Leafs, like Joe Bowen and Paul Hendrick, obviously they want the team to go as far as they can. I don't blame them for that.
But the things that I get emotionally, like
individual sports?
Well, there is some of that. I mean, you know what it's like. When you are a real, real fan of something, you can't fake it. Your team loses and you lay awake at night and you curse because they lost. It's so silly to say, but I still am that way with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And I know nobody cares, but it's really part of your culture.
I watched you.
When you're from Saskatchewan.
I watched it all ooze out of you at the debut at the Rogers Centre. Like, a lot of time left. We can get back in it.
I am that way when it comes to Graham DeLay, right? I get as emotional, and my country, the Olympics and stuff like that. Yeah. But I get as emotionally invested in Graham's golf game as I do for any sport anymore.
Yeah,
we're from basically the same hometown in Saskatchewan. We're basically the same age, and God, I remember when this guy was you know, winning Saskatchewan amateur championships, and you know, I'm so proud that he's doing what he's doing, but he just has a rough time at the British Open the last 2 holes and is now 6 over on the tourney.
And yet, it's disappointing. Nobody more disappointed than him, but it's not like I hate saying it's not some major setback. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
no, of course. I mean, we're still biding our time and waiting.
Early in his career.
We had Jason. I mean, he's ready. He's ready to win. He has a bunch of top fives. We had Jason Sobel on earlier this week from the Golf Channel. Really good writer. And he laid it out for us. Graham DeLay's game was not overly suited to this week. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. He was still 1 under yesterday. you just hate to see him fall out of contention so quickly.
But I bet you the average Canadian who, if they follow golf really casually, feels like Graham DeLette's this youngster, and David Hearn is a lot older, and he's not. He's 3 years older. He's 35. Graham DeLette's 32. I mean, that's a distinction I'd make there.
Well, I would think most people would think David Hearn is maybe younger because Graham DeLette's been on the radar for so long. Maybe it's different out east.
I'd say that it is because we've heard Hearn's name for several years. And really, I can tell you the first time I might have heard DeLette's name, period, for anything, might have been two and a half years ago.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
I'm a bad example.
That's
there.
Where you come from.
Yeah.
And again, we knew Mike Weir in Ontario long before. I mean, his name was on people's radar in 1998, 1999. I mean, wasn't he not 30, 31 when he won the Masters? So he'd been around quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's about where Graham DeLette is right now. So.
Yep, 32. Yeah.
So Graham DeLette, he's six over on the tourney. David Hearn tees off at about 10 this morning. He was two under yesterday, and we discussed it a little bit. There's this feeling of, at least I'd imagine there'd be this feeling of, hey, screw it, right? No pressure. I didn't think I was going to play in this thing. And Mark Calcavecchia drops out. Mark Calcavecchia's name was still, like, you search tee times. His name's still on the tee sheet. Then he gets replaced by David Hearn and a really solid two under yesterday.
And you'd be surprised if the scores can't hold up. Rory McIlroy is not shooting, 366s going into Sunday.
Oh, no, it'll be tougher today. The wind's going to pick up and the rain's going to start coming down, especially tomorrow.
Yeah, it's going to rain tomorrow. And it is very hard to look and figure that you're going to get a scenario. Like Zach Johnson won his last year at 500 par. Marco Mira was a shot behind at 4 under. It's really, really rare. The leaders were 3 under going into the third round and the fourth round. And actually, you know, Zach Johnson had to pick up his game and shoot a 66. So it's... Yeah, I think we'd be surprised if you got scores that are in the 12s, 13s, and 14s of the negative variety going into Sunday.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's a really good leaderboard. I mean, you can't win on the first day, but you can lose it. And the guys that are in the red numbers and hanging around include Tiger Woods. It includes Jim Furyk and Sergio and Ricky Fowler and Adam Scott's 2 under. Ryan Moore is 2 under. And Phil Mickelson's having a real good day today. He's 2 under to move to even. So it all sets up pretty nicely. And Graham DeLette, good bounce back with a birdie. So he's 5 under. 5 under overall.
We'll talk to Ian Leggett about 40 minutes before Tiger Woods goes out. We're going to talk to him at 8:20 this morning. Woods goes out about 9:05.
Also, coming up at about 6:28 this morning, we'll get into this next hour, but I think it's really fascinating, this whole Andrew Wiggins possible trade already. It's never a good sign when you're traded before your first ever game in any sport. But Cleveland is all of a sudden a contender. And they have reportedly offered up Andrew Wiggins to Minnesota for Kevin Love. What is the fallout of this? And which side stands to win the most? I think it's a great conversation.
Yeah, there's been a long time where this kind of thing hasn't happened in the NBA. There used to be more scenarios where you had, like, Chris Webber got traded for Penny Hardaway. Chris Webber was by far the best player coming out of college, and they traded him for Penny Hardaway and a bunch of future first-round draft picks. I think there were two. One of them might have been conditional. But Webber was obviously the better player. We saw it in the NFL only with Eli Manning that I can think of recently, where he wasn't going to go play for the San Diego Chargers. The Giants jumped up from 4 or 5 and got him, and San Diego ended up instead with Philip Rivers in the top five, which they can't complain about. But it's we were going to mention it later in the show how it's you don't see this at all in hockey, like at all anymore.
Your number one scenario with Eric Lindros,
where he doesn't report, and a year later he gets dealt. But there's nothing else like that.
One player changes the fortunes of your franchise so much, and with LeBron James there. Guys, it's a longer conversation. With LeBron James there, Kevin Love goes there, and today we're saying they're the best team in the Eastern Conference.
So. Yeah.
But Andrew Wiggins could be an undeniable superstar. But are they easier to obtain in the NBA? I'd argue they are. 551. Let's do now and then.
Now and then. A hopefully but potentially not entertaining look back at some of the great and not so great moments in this day's history. I'll be back.
All right, on this date, July 18, 1921, the Black Sox trial begins in Chicago. This was hard to watch. You couldn't watch live streaming of it. It was very hard to follow online. There were not a lot of bloggers tweeting from the courtroom.
It was
very difficult to keep up with.
How much of Pantlo, the primetime sports special, did you watch? Because there was the they delved
well,
in deep into
Bob reported live from that trial.
I was going to say they delved in deep into the 9/11 day here, yeah. And then the whole racism thing with Cito Gaston. But their coverage of this trial was.
Made the show
right
what it was,
there.
Really. Now, I feel like I know more about this because of reading
and the movie.
And also 8 Men Out. I think almost every baseball fan, I hope every baseball fan's seen 8 Men Out.
Ray Liotta, right?
Forgive me, but he was he not? now, and nobody remembers the actor who played Joe Jackson. Was D.B. Sweeney playing Joe Jackson?
D.B. Sweeney, that's correct.
That was John Cusack's everybody, in it, everybody John Mahoney's
knows,
in it.
Everybody knows D.B. Sweeney because he's definitely a B-list guy, but he's one of those crappy, hey, I play hockey, so I'm hosting the NHL awards guy.
Yeah.
D.B. Sweeney. He'd be like a Joey Vendetta buddy kind of thing.
And Joey Vendetta's watched The Cutting Edge an awful lot. More for Moira Kelly than anything.
I watched The Cutting Edge.
61, Commissioner Ford Frick rules Babe Ruth's record of 60 home runs in 154 games in 1927 has to be broken in the first 154 games of 162, meaning Roger Maris chasing him had to do it at the time. The only negative I see to shortening the baseball schedule is having people wonder what are the milestones, because baseball has that more than any other sport. So if you did go to 150 games and say it's just better, players are going to be healthier, we're going to get to the playoffs earlier, not have bad weather during all these playoff games.
The only sport that you could shorten by 20% tomorrow and nobody would notice is the NBA. Because it's not about, oh, he led the league in scoring with 3,000 points.
It's all average.
Nobody cares about that. It's all average. Everything's average.
On this date in 1994, at the box office, True Lies made its debut, grossed $40 million. That doesn't seem like much now. It had a $115 million budget. Yes, it would make its money back at the end of the day.
True Lies, famous Jamie Lee Curtis scene. Jamie Lee Curtis, she wrote this really weird line between super hot and very mom.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. Now eats a lot of yogurt. A lot of it.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
She, you know what she was? She was a classic mom with a ridiculous body. That's kind of how it went.
Forrest Gump was knocked out of number one after 3 weeks at number one by True Lies.
Great movie, and I don't care what you guys say. It was a great movie.
Happy birthday on this day to Vin Diesel, who was quite a star in his own right for a little while. He had some years there where he was a big name.
He had Triple X was a movie. He had a couple of car racing movies.
How old is that Vin Diesel person?
God, 45.
47, as a matter of fact. Tori Hunter. Still at it?
Tori Hunter.
A cop wouldn't help
formerly
him
formerly a 90210.
That's right.
Tori Hunter, yes.
Yes.
When he went ass over tea kettle in the Boston
the cop goes, yeah!
I would say Tori Hunter would be 38.
39, as a matter of fact. Jamie Benn of the Dallas Stars.
Young. Young and a stud, 24.
25, and Joe Torre turns how old today?
67.
74, as a matter of fact.
Jeez.
And people still think he should manage. Prostate issues and whatnot. These are long, three and a half hour games.
You lose your ability to know the sport of baseball.
You're so far away from the bathroom on the dugout. and then when you got to make a pitching change, that walking. The number one song on this day, 1987, is Hearts Alone, Ann Wilson, Nancy Wilson. Actually, it's the opposite. Nancy and Ann.
Right.
Best of
I just don't know how you can jog to this on the treadmill. It's incredible.
I slow down for that. I'm more doing stretching for this on the mat. 5:55. It's Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Prices like no other. From a club like no other. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Stretch it out. Warm up for your day with some exercises for your brain. Hey, don't want to pull a cerebellum. This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The Blue Jays have some good players, probably at least a 2 to 3 week gap before they get all their guys back. If they aren't able to succeed in that area, in this portion of the schedule right now, then maybe by the time they get back, it's too late.
6:03, good morning. It is Brady and Walker on your Friday. Baseball is back. heading into the weekend. Jays and Rangers tonight. Dickey and Darvish at the Rogers Center. And that was Shai Davida yesterday on Tim and Sid. We discussed it yesterday. Greg, we'll discuss it again today. Before the Jays get all healthy, which is in about 3 weeks, what do you have to do to stay alive? And that's just it. The goal is to keep your head above water. It's not even to gain on this ground in the coming week or two on Texas, because you're still not fully healthy. Well, it begins tonight, a tough task with Yu Darvish, but a struggling Texas Rangers club comes in.
It's not a good baseball team right now. I'm not sure it's going to be the rest of the season. They saw Nelson Cruz vacate in the offseason. They traded for Prince Fielder. He's out for the season.
Yep,
and
so
they lose
no
Ian Kinsler
yeah.
off their roster as well. And the starting pitching, we all were like fascinated by how good Texas's starting pitching was back, even I'd say Darvish's rookie season, and now in 12, and now it's this utter dog's breakfast of guys that are just seem to be hanging on. But when they could throw out Yu Darvish, Matt Harrison was a very good starter. They had they added Ryan Dempster at the trade deadline to make a push, and it got them into the playoffs. But my heavens, they have fallen off the map, and a terrible team ERA, and it's going pretty badly for Ron Washington's team.
The Blue Jays lineup over the last few weeks was nothing to be envious about. With the injuries, you put in guys that shouldn't be there. It's not rocket science, and everybody's sick of seeing it. That said, this 2-8 road trip, as bad as it was, and they did play bad baseball, you also weren't going into easy ballparks to face bad pitchers and bad teams. There was none of that. It was very much the best team in baseball, the Oakland A's. It was Jeff Samardzija. It was David Price. It was C.J. Wilson and company in L.A. against the Angels. It was a tough road trip. Now, Yu Darvish is tough, but over the next week or two, we might see maybe a more, would you say, accurate assessment of where this team is over the next few weeks?
Well, even towards the end of the month, there's 14 games left in the month. The first seven at home, the next seven on the road, and then they finish out on the road with a four-game series in Houston to start the month before Baltimore and Detroit are here. So you got 14 games. That leads up to there'll be 110 games played and just 52 left by the end of July. So it will tell you a lot. 10-4 is great. 7-7 is
you take 7-7 right now.
I don't want to take 7-7. Mediocrity doesn't get them there the rest of the way.
Yeah,
and you just said this is a soft portion of their schedule, so you can't just be 500 for it and then lose to all these tougher teams in August. Look what you're setting yourself up to do.
You would gladly take 7-7. You're not healthy. You don't have your team. 7-7 keeps you in the hunt. Absolutely, it does. Right?
I'm not talking about keeping in the hunt. We're not talking about staying in the hunt. Yes, I agree. That's better than 4-10, which knocks you out. There's almost no conversation you can have about playoffs if they're 4-10 the rest of the month. Right.
But yes, they're going to need a big month. They're going to need a big run somewhere. It's not coming right now. Right now, it's still survival mode. You got to be realistic here.
Would you say there's no scenario where it's acceptable to lose 2 of 3 to the worst team in the American League and then say, hey, woo, playoffs, we're coming?
The only tough thing is it's Darvish in the opener, right? If Darvish 3 hits you, is anybody stunned?
Right, and the Blue Jays decided to pitch their best pitcher in the series, and he'd obviously better win Sunday because they don't get to use him in 4 games against the Red Sox.
So you are the Texas Rangers, and you're not desperately filling holes because your season is done. What do you make of the call-up of J.P. Arencibia, who's going to play in this series for the first time since, like, the opening month of the season in Toronto and get booed mercilessly? Is this, well, it's obviously on purpose, or are the Rangers in a spot where they don't care who, they don't care where? This is a professional baseball team. We run it.
Desperate
That's how
times.
We run it.
Don't you think desperate times call for desperate measures? I'm looking at this is... If Arencibia plays tonight, he'll be their 8th starting first baseman of the season. And again, we think the Jays have jumped around and had to utilize some strange roster moves to field a lineup.
At least 4 or 5, it feels like, doesn't
but
it?
They've lost, you know, so they lose Prince Fielder. They've lost Mitch Moreland to the DL. There's guys I've barely heard of who've played first base for double-digit games this year, and they just DFA'd Carlos Pena. So it's still a lineup. Don't you think it's still a lineup you send out there? And if you're Ari Dickey, you're going... It's Adrian Beltre. He's probably going to the Hall of Fame. It's Shin-Soo Choo. It's Elvis Andrus. It's Alex Rios.
Yes, it's still a lineup.
There are 4 or 5 guys that can bruise you and batter you pretty easily.
It's still surprising they're as bad as they are.
But Arencibia is going to... So if he plays at first base tonight, which often was sort of rumored when he was with the Toronto Blue Jays that it would be something long-term for him, or that would be the better fit for him if people were questioning whether he could handle the pitching staff or not. But he's probably earned his promotion coming back. They like this Chirinos at catcher, Robinson Chirinos, who's not hitting great for a catcher, not by any stretch, but he has 9 home runs. He's got an OPS almost 700. So he's doing better than J.P. Arencibia would. I don't know. It's a one-year deal. They need bodies right now, and Arencibia is a warm body. That's the best thing we can say about it.
Just very ironic timing as they come into the Rogers Center tonight. 608, Brady and Walker, let's get you what you need to know on your Friday.
This is your Friday morning six-pack. 6 things you need to start your day.
All right, number 6, talking about 2 sports stars. Remember, a couple of months ago, Tracy McGrady was going to join the professional baseball ranks, going to play for the Summerland Skeeters or something, of the independent ball. And he has since retired. Yesterday, or 2 days ago, I should say, threw his final pitch. He struck out somebody at the All-Star game and said, that's it. After 2 months and about 8 innings of relief work or whatever it was, Tracy McGrady has ended his quest.
It is kind of fascinating. So we had an off-air conversation that led from LeBron James to Michael Jordan talking about how he gave it 1 year when he was 31. And that 30 for 30 with Terry Francona as the Birmingham Bulls manager, you noted the quote that said, look, if he'd stuck with us another 3 years or even started a couple years earlier, people wouldn't make fun of his career so much. It was because of the Norm MacDonald joke we played yesterday on the ESPN.
Yeah, and Michael Jordan's baseball career, quote-unquote, has been a punchline. But I'm with Francona in that quote. I don't know if you watched the 30 for 30. Yeah. I fully believe that Michael Jordan would have figured it out. At the end of his brutal first season playing double-A ball, he went down and played in that, whatever it was, the fall instructional league. And his numbers got better, and he started hitting better. He started swiping more bases. I think Michael Jordan would have played in the big league.
But for McGrady to step in, he's 35, to not have thrown a baseball. It's one thing if he wanted to be an outfielder and he had a good stick, but he wanted to pitch and to have not pitched with any semblance of competitive baseball in, what, 15 years? I don't know how much he played in high school. And obviously he went right to the pros out of high school here to Toronto.
But when you can throw 90, right? 90 plus, you can't.
Is that what he was hitting? Was he touching that on the gun?
Oh, yeah, the guy can heat it up. That's why he pitched, yeah. Number 5, bad news for the Toronto Argos. They placed Chad Owens in the 6-game injury list. They visit the Ottawa Red Blacks tonight. Here we are in week 4, and the Red Blacks finally get to play their first home game in this newest edition of the franchise's history.
I'll check some of it out tonight. They're super excited. They're sold out in Ottawa. Anybody who's been there knows how sort of run down that Lansdowne Park, Ottawa Civic Center area kind of got, and they've refurbished it, new buildings going up. So it's exciting for their city. We'll see how many sellouts they have this year, and they're 0-2 so far.
I'll be at the ball game tonight, so no CFL.
Do you want me to text
CFL?
Do you want updates on just touchdowns and field goals or single points as well? Because I'll do that.
Number 4, the Blue Jays did make some. They were in the news yesterday for a few reasons. Number 1, they claim former Jay, Brad Mills, off waivers from Oakland, who was one of the odd men out, basically, when the A's started to get healthier and then brought back Jeff Samardzija and Jason Hamill from the Chicago Cubs. The Jays also DFA Deck McGuire, a familiar name around these parts. Also, AAA Bisons, they move Aaron Sanchez to the bullpen. And a lot of people speculating that means Sanchez, in short order, maybe in the next couple of weeks, will be up here with the big club pitching out of the bullpen.
I'm curious to see if that ends up taking place. Can we say it worked with Marcus Stroman? Because people were kind of disappointed by Stroman's bullpen performances. I didn't read anything into it. I didn't think anything was mishandled. They wanted to get him innings, major league innings. They got him major league innings. And then when the time was right, there's, you know, goodbye Liam Hendricks. Come on up, Marcus Stroman.
Well, Sanchez is very much on an innings limit this year. And right now, the Blue Jays don't really need help in the rotation, but they probably do need help in the bullpen.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure Sanchez would welcome a promotion to the major leagues if it meant pitching out of the pen.
Yeah, it's a little bit less buses, more airplanes, put it that way.
Number 3, British Open update round 2. As mentioned, this is what we got going on right now. Rory McIlroy doesn't tee off for at least a few hours, but a 6-under 66 yesterday. On the course right now, Graham Dillette, he's through 11. The Canadian is 6 over on the day, 5 over for the tournament. Phil Mickelson, a mover today, 2-under. He's even overall, and plenty of guys still to come on the course. George Coetzee, the South African, has moved up to a tie for second with Matteo Manassero of Italy and Adam Scott. He's at 3-under for the tournament as well. David Hearn, the Canadian, doesn't tee off until 10 this morning. He shot a very solid 2-under 68 yesterday. Number two, could Andrew Wiggins be on the move? Greg Cleveland is reportedly buckled and made him available to the Minnesota Timberwolves for Kevin Love. Short answer, do you do it?
I do. It's fascinating to see if they will do it.
It's tough to do.
It's really tough to do. You're giving away 6 years of age to move a 19-year-old Wiggins for a 25-year-old Kevin Love. So now Love has to they want Love to extend long-term. But I'd say this, Andrew, this is the intrigue to me. Wouldn't Kevin Love say, LeBron only re-signed for 2 years? Why would I give you a 7-year extension? And just by happenstance, LeBron decides, and LeBron may win a ring in Cleveland and then say, I got your ring. I'm going to go somewhere else now and win again.
Well,
and Kevin Love's still there. I wouldn't want to sign for any longer than LeBron is there if I'm Love. He didn't want to go there in the first place.
Somebody in this situation is going to have to make a leap of faith. Right,
100%,
or sure. under the table handshake.
It's either Love or it's the Cavs to get him, or it's Minnesota to give him up.
More on this coming up at 6:28. How does it compare to the NHL? And can you trade a number one pick overall in almost any sport? Number one thing you need to know: Blue Jays are back. It is game day. Texas Rangers and the Toronto Blue Jays 7 tonight. Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet Ontario. Rangers have lost 22 of their past 25. Jays haven't been much better, to be fair. R.A. Dickey against Yu Darvish. 6:15 at 6:22 on Brady and Walker. Tommy John, it's an epidemic. And agent Scott Boris weighs in. We'll tell you what he said.
You're listening to Brady and Walker.
Those goofy bastards are just about the best thing I've got going in this crazy world.
On Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
6:22, good morning. Brady and Walker on your Friday. We're taking into the weekend. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Greg Brady. This is a topic that is hot in baseball right now, and of course, Blue Jays fans know it well with some of their pitchers that it's plagued, and that is Tommy John. And the conversation raised to another interesting level yesterday.
They had a 2-hour special, yeah, Andrew, on MLB Radio last night, and they got into why it's happening as much. Epidemic can be a word that's overused in the media for anything. Texting and driving. Do we have an epidemic, or are people just being careless about it? But I'd look at this scenario, and pitch limits are something that are, there are factors, and I looked up all the different states in the U.S. and found there's a great variation of limiting pitchers. And Scott Boris was on the show last night, Super Agent of the Stars. And made note that they have to make these stricter. They have to tighten these up. They are there for Little League already, but he talked about having to get more of a new system for high school pitchers who want to get looked at by Major League scouts. Of course they do. They want college scholarships. They want to get drafted and go from there. Here's Scott Boris from the MLB Radio special last night, and we'll give you some interesting numbers on exactly, and you can maybe relate to this if you've got a young kid who's playing right now as well, and especially if he's a pitcher. Here he is from last night's MLB Radio special.
I think what we have to do is that we have to reinvent what traditional behavior is as to how to protect both the team's investment, the player's future, and really our rule system as to what we need to do. Because managers and coaches and evaluators and general managers all feel that those pitchers really can substantially help their major league teams at their respective ages and because of their abilities, so they advance into the big leagues. So to completely bar that, I think, obviously is something that is not a workable resolution. However, certainly to look at it where there's an expectancy on the part of the manager, the coaching staff, and the general managers, when you do advance these players, that we have got to dramatically lessen the inning.
Sir Scott Boris last night, this is an unbelievable standalone problem in pro sports. I can't think of another sport, Andrew, where you'd look at and say, well, we got to limit players' time. Now, you wouldn't want the OHL expanding to a 90-game schedule, But you also don't say, well, players can't play on the ice more than 25 minutes. Quarterbacks can't throw more than 40 passes in a game. This is the only thing that affects the human body so dramatically that we feel like we've got to step in and put some limits on where 15, 16-year-olds are.
I have some questions here, and this is about perspective, because here we are in 2014, and are players getting hurt more than they did 5, 10, 50 years ago? I would argue no. We've just advanced medically. And we diagnose, and guys will go under surgery or will undergo surgery for things that wouldn't have even been detected 20 or 25 years ago. Would you agree with that?
I think that's part of it, but I don't think that's the biggest thing. But
no,
keep going.
It's an element.
It's an element for sure.
Okay, you look at the back in the day and the career wins leaders. So Cy Young has 511 career wins. Walter Johnson is 417. And we're in an age where we'll probably never see a 300-game winner again, which is incredible. You don't think that when they retired, guys like Cy Young and Walter Johnson and their 10,000 innings pitched and their hundreds of complete games, you don't think those guys went through injuries and they don't all need Tommy John or reconstructive surgery on the rotator cuff? They probably all do. But they didn't know any better back in the day, and they still pitch 9 innings a game.
Yeah. There's a study I looked at last night from University of North Carolina that notes in Little League, so that's 8 to 13 before you get into travel baseball, and then you're leading high school baseball into college. Pitch count programs cut by half. They believe the risk of shoulder injury in youth baseball pitchers age 8 to 13. The problem is, I think you're right about everything you said, and yet I would bet you that kids are throwing curveballs younger and they're throwing sliders younger. There's always been heat. There's always been fastballs. But the idea of a 10-year-old practicing over and over again a slider and then utilizing it in a Little League game, that's probably more important than the innings count or the pitch count or however you want to limit young pitchers from throwing baseballs. And by the time they get to 20, their arm's not the same.
And Greg, maybe I'm helping make your point as well, because maybe Walter Johnson, back when he was 13, 14 years old, he's not playing expensive travel baseball and staying in hotels with his peewee team. He's probably throwing hay bales, and he's playing baseball during baseball season with the rest of his schoolmates.
I'm the first to say I think we can overdo it. I watch kids play. I coach soccer on Wednesday, baseball on Thursday. I watch these kids, and they have this big snack time at halftime, and I'm going, we didn't do that. We were lucky we remembered to bring water. We just go back out there.
Yeah.
So has there been a softening of the collective underbelly of youth sports?
Yes.
Yes, there has. But then you look at the kind of stuff like this and kids that are throwing their arm out. The kids that get to the MLB, Andrew, the Drabecks and the Hutchinsons, those are the ones we hear about. You don't hear about a kid who was the best kid for miles around in his county or in his state at age 15, and then he couldn't pick up a baseball by age 17, or he had to move to the outfield, or he just wasn't the same by that point because he blew his arm out. Again, I can't find another sport where to excess. In basketball, hockey, football, you'd have that unless it's concussion-based, unless it's practical physical injury-based, you'd have that happen.
And we're also aware of it. Like, and I know I keep using him as an example, but Walter Johnson, I'm sure at one point in his career, he needed to rest. Like, he had dead arm. He needed to have Tommy John. He needed to have arthroscopic surgery. And he probably pitched through it and threw 33 complete games in a row. If Felix Hernandez, who let's say Felix Hernandez is the best pitcher in the American League, for argument's sake right now. Let's see, he had some minor discomfort in his elbow.
Yeah.
He'd get blasted. If he lost a few miles per hour off his fastball, he'd get crushed, right? Because maybe the hitters and the video work and the scouting, it's that much better. A guy like this, the guys that have 300-400 wins, they could get away with it back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, that factors in. Some of the high school ones, I mentioned this earlier. So let's take a random state, North Carolina. No player may pitch more than, this is high school rules. No player may pitch more than 12 innings during any consecutive 3-day period. So if you could even go 7 on a Monday and come back and throw 5 on a Wednesday, but then you're done and they shut you down until the next Monday. I played in the league at 18 and 19 where you were only allowed to throw 5 innings a game. You could have some beast up there on the mound. You're going, thank God he's gone after 5 innings. Yeah. We might score a run in the last 2. And I don't know that was for pitch count as much as that was Like on teams you played with or I played with, balance, you only had three pitchers. You might have a roster of 16 guys and three, maybe four guys could pitch.
Yeah,
so you had to use
I remember really coming into effect in tournaments because you play five times, but as you had to, every guy could only throw a certain amount of innings.
Yeah.
So it was when you'd use your guy, you know, would you save your so-called ace for the final? 6:30, Brady and Walker. The news yesterday in the NBA revolves around, once again, the Cleveland Cavaliers. They feel they're all of a sudden close. They'd like to get a more established star for LeBron James to play with. And that star is, in fact, Kevin Love of the Minnesota Timberwolves. The T-Wolves, according to reports, weren't budging unless the Cavs started to offer up Andrew Wiggins. They said no, they said no. And yesterday they said yes.
Well, David Blatt, the new coach, a week ago said Andrew Wiggins isn't getting traded. Yesterday, here's his quote. That's why they call them rumors. Sooner or later, he's going to have to deal with it. So if he has to deal with it now, then so be it. It's summer league. He's learning everything as he goes along. That doesn't sound like, again, let me remind you folks, again, like I told you already, we will not trade Andrew Wiggins. I didn't hear that yesterday.
No, and I wonder, this is the first thing I thought. Remember when you read the LeBron article from SI, the one that broke the news? It was very well done. And he talked about where Cleveland is, and he said, I want to win a title for this city, but we're not close. Like, made no bones about it. We're not there yet, but I'm looking forward to playing with Vera Zhao. And I think Kyrie Irving could be one of the best point guards in the league. At no mention in there at any point was Andrew Wiggins. And I wondered at the time if it was on purpose, simply because he knew this guy, as good as he is, might be the trade chip.
Yeah, that has to factor in. And let's face it, Kevin Love is as good as he is, as dramatic as the numbers are, as excellent a rebounder as he is. He can shoot from outside. He's a great complement to LeBron James. He's the quintessential
number
four.
He's better than Chris Bosh.
Yeah, he is. And yeah, a lot younger as well. I look at Kevin Love and I think, well, individually, so many people haven't seen him because he hasn't made the playoffs. And he's in the Western Conference, and there are teams. Blake Griffin's never been out of the second round, and people adore Blake Griffin. They treat him like a god. I've never seen an NBA player of more commercials for never having played in a conference final. But this is a great chance for Kevin Love to get that kind of exposure, and he knows that. And he's not going to stay in Minnesota either way. So I wonder. He says, this is an opportunity. LeBron's basically handpicking me, choosing me to come and be a part of this, or I can be a free agent and just get wooed like Carmelo Anthony and settle somewhere and not care about it as much.
But I don't care. I don't care what Kevin Love thinks in the least. He's an idiot if he doesn't want to go, and he's going to want to go. The question is, if you're Cleveland, and it's different than the NFL. It's different than the NHL, where right now your number one pick, guys like that are so hard to come by. The franchise guys in hockey have reached a point where your so-called franchise guy in basketball, it's not that hard to obtain. People trade first round picks like they're going out of style.
And I can't tell if that there's time, Andrew, to develop for these players, that these players take 3-4 years. Tim Duncan wasn't Tim Duncan until maybe his fourth year in the league. There's a lot of guys from the LeBron draft, obviously, that you can say that about. Bosh and Wade and Anthony didn't look like they looked until 3 years in. So it takes time. Is LeBron James going to be 34 years old when Andrew Wiggins is playing his best basketball? That must be something they're thinking about in Cleveland.
Yeah, more on this coming up, including just you have to start the conversation with how good do you think Andrew Wiggins is going to be? There's no doubt that you get selfish if you're Cleveland, because all of a sudden you realize, hey, if we had Kevin Love today, maybe in 5 years we're not as good, but Kevin Love today puts us in at least to the conference final next season.
If you're Dan Gilbert and you're the owner and you bring Cleveland that title in the next 2 years and you got all this positive momentum after being thought of as being a jerk owner basically since they lost LeBron and maybe even a little bit before that, I don't know that you can worry about what your fans think 5 years from now, because you got a banner hanging up there.
6:34, Brady and Walker will give you your update on the British Open coming up. Also at 6:48, Tony Gwynn has passed on, but how he's still having an effect on Major League Baseball and could continue in 2016.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Q.
keep it here for more Brady and Walker, only on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I'm Andrew Walker. He is Greg Brady. It is Brady and Walker on your Friday, taking into the weekend. 6:42, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This week is notorious dead week in sports. We're all glad to see baseball come back tonight, which made it, I don't know if it really made more of an impression yesterday, but it was kind of a busy news day, including
one
Malaysian flight shot down.
One very unbelievable story. The other is obviously, the emotional one that I'm well aware that you can't go to the dinner table and talk about the Middle East and change somebody's mind about it. My dad and I argue about the Middle East all the time, and I think we think the same thing about it. So it doesn't work. It's not a good conversation point. There are conversations to have there, but yesterday, the Malaysia flight, kind of took over the news story rather than this invasion by Israeli forces into the city of Gaza. 298 dead. They still believe a surface-to-air missile hit a Boeing 77 that was leaving Amsterdam and headed to Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. And there's a lot of finger pointing going on, but most educated people that I've heard on this believe pro-Russia insurgents shot the plane down. What we don't know yet is, was it an accident? Were they trying to shoot what they thought was a Ukraine military plane down? Either way, it's a massive mistake if that's what it is, and it's going to be very difficult because this area here is in eastern Ukraine, and you can't get independent people to – it's a crime scene, and you can't get independent people into this crime scene because it's so conflicted with obviously rebels and violence and the potential – the UN forces can't even get in there right now. And you can only think if you had a loved one on that plane, it's an unspeakable tragedy. And then there's the putting together why. And when I first heard, I don't know where you were when you first heard about the plane crash, but I didn't understand the story the first 10 minutes. I'm seeing little bits and pieces on Twitter. I'm trying to piece it together on the radio and I'm going, wait, they found the other plane?
Right,
I saw that for 10 minutes and I'm going, it's a brand new plane and it's brand new people and it's awful.
Yeah. And this, not to sound insensitive, but when you first heard it and it was a plane crash, they're tragic, but there's a certain percentage that's going to happen. You have thousands of flights that go every day. A plane crashes once in a while. It's a terrible thing, but it's much more real when you realize it was shot down and there's internationals on board this flight. And I think there was six people from the Netherlands and there's one Canadian.
Tons of people from the Netherlands. Yeah,
one Canadian on this flight as well. So
and it was the anniversary of the 96 crash, which was TWA Flight 800. And you can remember that was a couple weeks before the Olympics were going to start in Atlanta. And a lot of people were that crashed into the Atlantic Ocean just after taking off from Kennedy Airport, supposed to go to Rome. And there were people thinking terrorism and what's the next step? And then that bomb goes off in Olympic Park. So that was 2 weeks where people hadn't put everything together just yet. In fact, Anderson Cooper slipped up on air on TSN CNN yesterday and said that that plane was shot out of the sky. And I was listening in the car to the CNN audio feed going, they've never determined that. That's a conspiracy theory, but they've never determined that. They're basically saying it was a fuselage issue and whatnot. So that happens on that anniversary 18 years ago. And now you are headed over to that area. I'm not as far from making light of this, but I don't like international flights on the best of days. And you're taking this trip with your girlfriend to Russia in a month.
Yeah. Now we're going, that's where she's from. And we're going over there with my folks in August. I've been there before, but it's kind of the southern tip of Russia, right where it kind of meets the Ukraine. So is it a stone's throw? No, it's not. But it is, it's enough of an area that people ask you about it. I've never been, and maybe this is a small town lock, you leave your keys in your car overnight mentality, your door's unlocked. I've never been worried about stuff like that. But
it's not a stress point.
No,
It's not the flight per se, but it's getting there and knowing you're in safe surroundings and
well, things are always safe. Things are always a little different. And every type of border security I remember the last time we were there, we were pulled over by a police officer in the country and had to give him money. And it's so weird to me that things like that happen.
How come you give him money?
So he doesn't arrest you. Basically. I mean, thank God you're with the right people, because it's just, here's your money and we'll just be on our way. All right. It's a ticket, but a ticket goes into their pocket. It's just,
so if we had to pay speeding tickets in cash along the road, it'd be similar to that.
Basically, except the cash speed. Would never see the, and you weren't speeding, right? everything like that. 6:47, Brady and Walker. More on the Blue Jays coming up after 7. And just how will that reception be for Jay Pierre and Sebia? We'll get into that at 7:02. Tony Gwynn passes away. It was a very sad story. I guess early last month was when it went down. And he dies of mouth cancer and linked to chewing tobacco, which a lot of major leaguers and minor leaguers still do. And I don't know if it has everything to do with Tony Gwynn, but it looks like the CBA push through might include a ban on chewing tobacco in the clubhouse.
Just takes one. It feels like it takes one. He's not the first person to die from this, but he's by far the most prominent. Yeah. And as we know in sports, it takes one minor league base coach gets hit in the head by a foul ball. Everyone wears helmets now. One girl tragically loses her life in that Columbus game. There's netting within every rink imaginable that people are going to go to in numbers. I know we talked about this a couple days after, and John Morosi said with us, who's going to join us at 7:40 this morning, our MLB insider, there's a big push for this. And then we even heard John Gibbons say afterwards, well, I heard about Tony Gwynn yesterday, and I quit. And now he's doing it again. I'm not saying it's an easy thing to give up. Far from it. And I've known guys who have dipped, and it's people say, I'm going to get married, and I'm going to quit. And they don't. I'm a dad now, and I have to quit. I don't want my son to. And they don't. And it's an incredible thing to give up. But the one thing you can say, though, beyond the obvious, is if it's not in the clubhouse, a lot of guys won't start. If it's not in the clubhouse. Yeah. If there was a blackjack table outside our studio, I'd play more blackjack. I'd lose more money. I'd have less disposable income than I have.
Yeah.
We love playing ping pong on Friday because there's a ping pong table there. It's another thing if we had to drive 20 kilometers to go play. It's right in front of you. When you have things put right in front of you, a lot easier to use them. So I understand.
It's a good point.
I understand the ban of it. And I don't know that you can ban a player. I don't know how you ban a player from doing it. I know guys don't smoke cigarettes in right field. But I also know that you're asking guys to give up something they are for better or worse, is something that's kind of part of what they do and how they do their job. And I am a big individual freedom fan also, because you can't die from secondhand smokeless tobacco. That's another factor right there.
At the end of the day, there is an element of, let's all settle down. We're all grown men here. You want to do what you do, and I want to do what I do. But it is an interesting point about, you know, if the Players Association and the CBA bans it from the clubhouse, guys are still going to find a way to chew if they really want to. But you're right. It's about that 21, 22-year-old player that comes in from Cuba or from AAA that's never started and won't feel a need to pick it up. And that's a positive thing.
You know how you see gum? You see gum everywhere in major league clubhouses.
I love gum.
I love gum too. I had some Hubba Bubba last night. I'm giving my kid gum when he plays baseball, and he loves it. So so I'm chewing gum on those nights also. We're like split a pack. It's kind of a dad-son thing to do. I wouldn't go today and buy a pack of gum just to get through the afternoon.
It's a baseball thing.
But if there was a big tin with 80 double bubbles in it, there's a good chance I'd have one or two by the end of the show.
Yeah.
You know me and my vices.
Well, it's like,
there's
in
a lot
what,
of mass liquids.
In what other walk of life or what other event do you sit around and say, where is the vendor with those sunflower seeds? Where I just can't. You go to see a movie, say, boy, I really wish I had a bag of spits.
That's why.
No, of course not.
That's why they invented the beer card girl, because you get it. Where else can I get a cold beer when I'm about to tee off on the 11th hole? I'm not bringing my own beer and putting them in my bags with a bunch of ice. Although people did used to do that. Now they don't have
to. You're making a lot of good points and a lot of good examples. That is not one of them. If there's no beer card girl, every able-bodied man packs his bag with six beers.
I don't remember it happening as often. Not nearly as often. It's messy. There's
what
prep.
What are you talking
there's
about?
There's preparation.
People
there's
put,
ice.
There's a beer cart girl, and guys still put beer in their bags. What are you talking
about? They buy it from her and put it in their bags, yes, but they don't have to bring their own ice.
No, you buy some, and then you put some
How
in your
cold?
Bag.
You got to... You got a 5.5 hour round. How cold is it? God, I'd love to debate this. This is a, you can tell it's a slow week. But either way, we'll see what transpires.
That's not the same thing is what I'm saying.
That's not the same. Okay.
It's people
not
drink beer in every walk of life, not just golf.
All right. My first three analogies were triple 20s, and this was like an 18.
Yes. Just off, you missed on that one.
It's just off.
You're going well, but I got to keep you in line sometime.
It's just off the corner. So I don't know. I mean, this is a long way away. They do their CBA for 2016. Tony Clark is the players' union head and said several players have just quit cold turkey. Again, which is really difficult to do. I watched my dad quit smoking cigarettes just like that, snap of a finger, when I was 12. My mom couldn't. It wasn't as easy.
Yeah, not everybody does it.
Yeah. British Open still going on, and as we mentioned, A lot of big names that are still yet to go out. I think it's going to be a fascinating late morning. You're going to get Jim Furyk and Sergio Garcia go out in about an hour and a half. They both veterans. Furyk's won his major. Garcia hasn't, but they're 4 under par. And a lot, you know, we joked about it with Jeff Blair as he was coming on yesterday. Adam Scott just had a late birdie, so he's moved to 3 under. But the three Italian players that are all very much in this hunt, you don't think Italy is a force for, you haven't in a long time, a force for golf on the PGA Tour or the European Tour, but there's the Molinari brothers and Matteo Manassero, who's a shot back of Rory McIlroy as well.
Now, yesterday, it really mattered when you were playing, and I think that could come into effect today, too. I think there was 18 rounds, I want to say, of 3 under or better, and 14 of those were wrapping up by the time our show got off the air. Right?
So, and then it's good to score early.
Yeah, and then everyone that went in the afternoon had a much more difficult time. And I don't know if we'll see the exact same thing today, but we might see those numbers even out a little bit because Rory doesn't tee off until later on. We're about, you know, 2-3 hours away. It's the same for Tiger Woods and the aforementioned Matteo Manassero, who's right up there. George Kutsi is the mover of the day. He's 2 under on the day and now down to 4 under overall. So Rory is still in that lead. He has hit the tee off today.
It's kind of fascinating because I remember all the talk of McIlroy after he won that very first major. And we all got, and I really hated, what I hated more than anything, Andrew, was the next Tiger.
You know what, though? But we didn't see, we had not seen anything like that.
Not it was quite.
He blew he blew the Masters. He was up by 4 in the final round and ended up falling way out of the top 10. Like, he blew that one. And the next major out, at Congressional, I believe, when no one really even threatened par, and he was sitting there at 9-10 under, we hadn't seen dominance like that since the peak of Tiger. So I don't blame anyone for bestowing that title at that time.
But that's saying, you can say it's Tiger-esque. When you use the phrase the next Tiger, that indicates, well, we'll have a guy win 3 slams in a year. Well, we'll have a guy win 8 in 4 years. And I don't think we'll ever see that again. There's some things you just think.
Majors.
Yeah, what'd I say?
Slams.
Oh, sorry. What you just
this
think.
Fancy pants Wimbledon.
You just think we won't see it again. And at the same time, now if we get to the point where he wins this, then he's won 3. He needs the Masters for a career basically, you know.
A career slam,
A career slam. I don't know. Then we're getting into a heavy conversation. Look how long it's taken a lot of golfers to win 3 majors or 4 majors. So it's a big weekend for him.
Blue Jays are back at 7:02 tonight and next on Brady and Walker. And Alfonso Soriano, according to Shai Davidi, the Jays are kicking tires. Is there a fit here?